From Sundress Media Productions, this is Spectrum 360. Welcome. Your Spectrum 360 host is Mark Skogman. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. and online anytime via podcast. Thank you for listening for the next hour. Spectrum 360 is progressive and features political talk and humor and also the arts and popular culture. Spectrum 360 starts right now. Let's get to work.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Any one of you who feels cynical, just consider where we have been.
If you want the truth, you should seek it out for yourself. That's what they're afraid of.
This is information the world needs to know.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Thank you. Bless you. This is the end of the meeting. It's the beginning of the movement. Thank you.
Yeah. Hello.
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 Hello. Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
That's right, folks. Don't touch that dial.
Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360.
From the sun, white sand beaches, palm trees, piña coladas in the tropical and beautiful Tampa Bay area, in the state of Florida, on the eastern coast of the Gulf of Mexico.
Got the sun on my shoulders and my toes in the sand, just dreaming, stitching.
This is the radio program Spectrum 360 for
Monday, the 10th of November, 2014.
You have an incoming transmission.
Revolution will not be televised.
The voice of news information has six.
The purpose of this program is to bring vital news.
Welcome. I'm your host, Mark Skogman, with associate producer and occasional host, Terry Weeks.
You imbecile! You bloated idiot!
What?
He is the most interesting man in the world.
You're so ugly you could be a modern art masterpiece.
On Spectrum 360 in this edition of Spectrum 360 again has multiple Spectrum 360 exclusives that you will hear on no other program. Keep listening. Segment one, a recorded Spectrum 360 exclusive segment from the Blue Ocean Film Festival. The introduction by the well-known actor Jeremy Irons to the film Trashed, about the environmental problem trash creates across the world. Jeremy Irons executive produced, appeared in on screen and narrated the film Trashed. It screened at the Blue Ocean Film Festival just last night on Sunday, the 9th of November, 2014, at the Mahaffey Theater in St. Petersburg, Florida, and was introduced live in person by Jeremy Irons himself. I didn't know he was such an environmentalist, even though he says that he isn't an environmentalist.
Well, I think after his experiences with this film, he is now.
Yeah, well, listen, we'll explain. And then the audio of the film trailer will give you a sense of what the film is like. Here's a preview.
From up here, our planet looks perfect. It's only when we look more closely that we start to see some of the results of our consumption. Does anyone know what happens to it all?
Well, no, apparently not. That's why we need to watch that film, correct? Yes, I think so. Okay, and then segment two. Recorded comments from Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO on Friday, the 31st of October, 2014, about Democratic candidates and campaigning. Now, this is funny. It's hilarious. And it's also, unfortunately, very true. So we're going to have that as well. And that's going to set up segment three. And then live in the studio, a Spectrum 360 roundtable discussion about the general election 2014 results with myself, co-host Terry Weeks, and campaign consultant, pundit, and friend of the program, Victor DiMaio. Victor makes his fourth appearance on Spectrum 360 this evening. This is going to be a fun discussion, given that Bill Maher is kicking off the discussion here with this hilarious election analysis. And here's a taste of that so you can find out what that's like.
And finally, new rule, Democrats have to wake up and realize that voting is the one thing that scares Republicans, which is why Republicans try to make it so hard. But not impossible. Of course it's sleazy, racist, and anti-democratic to pass voter ID laws. But the fact that they're making it harder to vote, let that inspire you. You're an underdog. You're Brad Pitt in a tank.
Yeah, that was good, wasn't it? I love it.
Isn't that what I've been saying?
Yes, and that is what you've been saying. Anyway, so we're going to have that. So those are the three segments for tonight. It's going to be a good program, and we'll do some more analysis of the election results from general election 2014, which happened last week, of course, on Tuesday. So that's the program. Let's get right to the first segment. This is, of course, Jeremy Irons introducing the film Trashed at the Blue Ocean Film Festival, and that took place on November 3rd through 10th. It actually ended yesterday in terms of the screenings and the celebrity events and so forth. Today was the actual final day of the festival, but the only thing that happened today was a street cleanup and then marking storm drains so that people know that they drain directly to the bay. So that was environmental activism, but it wasn't the actual film festival itself, which took place over the previous several days from November 3rd, Monday, through yesterday, which was November 9th, Sunday. There were a lot of events, absolutely a lot of events. So very, very cool. So there you go. That's the program. Let's get right to the first segment, like I said, so we can get the program going here. And you will hear what Jeremy Irons has to say in his own words. Enjoy.
I am a messenger. The film you're about to see has been shown at around 50 festivals, including Cannes. It's been nominated for 15 awards and won 9. I have shown it to the new president of Indonesia, members of the European Parliament, the British Parliament, the Scottish Assembly, the French National Assembly, the New York Mayor's Office, the New York Times, and now you. It's been licensed to be transmitted in Italy, Japan, Taiwan, Germany, and Argentina. We're still trying to raise the budget to distribute a version to schools around the world and create the subtitles needed in all the necessary languages. Yes, I'm still looking for money. I'm sad that my late arrival at the festival means that I haven't been able to share in the lectures, screening, and discussions. But I'm aware that over 100 organizations have taken part. Scientists, environmentalists, and filmmakers. Information has been shared, topics discussed, and different viewpoints argued. It's clear from the success of this festival and other environmental festivals around the world that more and more people are deeply concerned about the state of our oceans. And yet, nothing seems to be changing. Why is that? Let us be clear that we are engaged in a battle. A battle as wide as the oceans, that is, worldwide. and against commercial entities both on land and at sea, who prefer to turn a blind eye to the pollution they cause and the destruction left in their wake. It is a battle against those who refuse to recognize global warming and the consequent slow acidification of our seas. It is a battle against all of us who demand a constant supply of plentiful and affordable fish. It is a battle against all of us who refuse to recognize that with our ballooning global population, we must all share in changing our lifestyles to accommodate a world of finite resources. The truth is that those we battle against have almost unlimited financial resources. But does that mean they are destined to be the victors in the sacrifice of our only world? I believe that if every person on our planet understood the danger it was in, they would do everything in their power to help preserve it. And that is where we need the messengers. I have two proposals, and to you, my generous hosts, I throw down the gauntlet. Environmentalists and scientists are not always the best communicators, often working in isolation from each other. I propose Blue Ocean starts a website to gather all oceanic environmental organizations in all countries together. A website designed to put those working together category by category so they might share discoveries and solutions and build on that knowledge in a shared and transparent way. This could become the site of choice for anybody researching or educating on oceanic environmental issues. And secondly, I propose that Blue Ocean sets up an environmental film commission dealing with environmental issues whose remit would be to encourage the writing of mainstream films, scripts, as well as documentaries, and to be a major part of the funding of any of these scripts which they judge to be of sound worth. Those living along this beautiful coastline, allied with your partners living in beautiful Monaco, must constitute some of the most financially successful people on the globe. Who better to send a clear environmental message to the world? Who better to start to fund such an undertaking? An undertaking that could have some of the most important and beneficial results for the future generations who rely on our blue oceans.
From up here, our planet looks perfect.
It's only when we look more closely that we start to see some of the results of our consumption. Does anyone know what happens to it all?
This is not just a local problem.
Somehow in the deep ocean, we've got more trash than life.
We produce too much waste. We don't think about the consequences when we throw stuff away.
It seems to be a case of out of sight, out of mind.
Nature functions by building up and breaking down, building up and breaking down. We keep putting things into the environment that don't break down.
Everyone in the population today has these chemicals in their bodies.
It's everywhere.
It causes all sorts of diseases.
A woman has a way of getting rid of them. It's called having a baby.
Ah! Ah!
We did it with smoking, the smoking ban. We did it with seatbelts and wearing seatbelts. We did it with drink driving, actually, when that became unacceptable. We need to do this with waste.
Perhaps times will change and we will.
Okay, wasn't that great? That was Jeremy Irons introducing the film Trashed, which he executive produced and appeared in and narrated. It's a great film about exactly the title, Trash.
Now, Mark, I know that Jeremy Irons is really on a mission with this film, and he wants it to be viewed as widely as possible. I can't remember now. Did he say it was available online somewhere for people to obtain?
It is available online on the website. It's... I believe it's trashedfilm.com, if I remember right. So it has its own website where you can download it and watch it. You can also order it on DVD. You can also order it from Amazon on DVD. I know it's available on Amazon as well. So the Trashed Film website you can search for, and you can also search for it on Amazon. Buy it, watch it, show it to other people, download it, whatever form you need to get it. You need to get this film to watch it. It's very interesting. Very informative and very topical.
And you will be thinking about your waste, your garbage, in a whole new way after watching this film.
Absolutely. Our whole world, our whole natural environment is in way more trouble than the average person realizes. And you would realize that if you went to the Blue Ocean Film Festival and saw all the great films that are documenting the problems that we're having and good solutions as well. So... pay attention to the Blue Ocean Film Festival. Pay attention to the film Trashed. Wasn't Jeremy Irons great? He was great. A very humble man.
Yeah.
It was great to see him in person. I'd never
very
seen him.
Very passionate about this.
Yes. He was great. So that was just a wonderful segment with him. Very, very cool. Great. Woohoo!
Boom! Boom!
Okay. Yeah, that's the way I feel after hearing what he said. So let's go to Bill Maher. This is Real Time with Bill Maher. Bill Maher is the host, of course. The program is Real Time on HBO. And this is a sub-segment of his segment from the program. It's called New Rules. That's the segment. It usually ends the program. And this is one of the features in that, a little sub-segment from New Rules from Real Time with Bill Maher. This is from Friday, the 31st of October, 2014. And it's a rather interesting take analysis on Democratic candidates. Remember, this is just 3 days before the general election actually took place. So he was speaking about the election in present terms and in future terms. And this is what he had to say.
And finally, new rule, Democrats have to wake up and realize that voting is the one thing that scares Republicans, which is why Republicans try to make it so hard. But not impossible. Of course it's sleazy, racist, and anti-democratic to pass voter ID laws. But the fact that they're making it harder to vote, let that inspire you. You're an underdog. You're Brad Pitt in a tank. And is it really that hard to get a stupid ID card? And no, I'm not talking about the 100-year-old lady whose birth certificate was lost in the Triangle shirtwaist fire. I'm talking to people out there who won't stand in line for an hour to vote, but who'll camp out in front of Best Buy on Thanksgiving night to buy a TV 3 inches bigger than the one they already have. Okay, so... this is it, folks. The midterms are here in 4 days, and Democrats are in big trouble, despite the fact that the only idea the Republicans have this election is don't let anybody get you started on rape. But it didn't have to be this way. If Democratic candidates would just stop throwing their own people and achievements under the bus and distancing themselves from their own president, that is never a winning strategy. Just ask President Al Gore. Thank you. Clay Aiken, who is running in Congress in North Carolina, recently said about the president, I have nothing to do with him, and I can find several areas where I disagree. Okay, but come Wednesday, Obama will still have a job, whereas I don't know what Clay will be doing. Although I assume it involves a cruise ship and a cover of Copacabana. Well, sorry, but the one I feel bad for is Obama. 63 straight months of economic expansion. A depression averted. A deficit reduced by two-thirds. A health care law that's working and lowering costs. Two women on the Supreme Court. Bin Laden's dead. Stock market at record heights. An unemployment rate that dropped from 10.2 to 5.9. If you're a Fox News viewer trying to do the math, that's less. Gas prices are down. Is it really that hard a record to get behind? And yet, the way these Democrats have been distancing themselves from the president, you would think he'd just flown in from Liberia with his lunch in a barf bag. There are beheading videos with more likes. The Democrats have three Senate candidates who won't even admit to having voted for Obama. Kentucky's Allison Grimes was an Obama delegate. How do you explain that? Hey, that's why they call it a convention. I was drunk. It's like if someone asked, do you have sex with your husband? And you replied, I'd rather not say. But I will say that when my husband does want to have sex, I often disagree. I mean, come on. Come on, Democrats. You gave people health care, not herpes. Own it. Instead of chasing polls, move them. And speaking of chasing polls, one more thing about Clay Aiken. Clay was asked if he'd like the President of the United States to come campaign for him, and he said, I don't need that. We're doing well. No, you're not. You're gay in North Carolina. Have you looked around? Half the state is redneck, which is a huge improvement. It used to be all redneck. That's the good news, that now there actually is in North Carolina a liberal base that you could have energized instead of this pipe dream of trying to make the Duck Dynasty types vote for a guy who's had his eyebrows done. Democrats are always doing this, and that's why they're just like Clay on American Idol, happy to come in second. To me, this sums it all up. On gay marriage, Clay Aiken said, it's not an issue that's really on the radar here. It's not something that affects people's daily lives. Well, it affects some of them, like, I don't know, you. And this is why Clay Aiken is definitely going to lose. He's having trouble getting the Clay Aiken vote. That's our show. I'll be with you tomorrow, home, Jackson, Mississippi, November.
Okay. That was Real Time with Bill Maher. That was the last segment of the program where he does New Rules, which is commentary on current events. And that was a sub-segment of that segment from the program at the end there, New Rules. That's from Friday, the 31st of October, 2014. He brings up some interesting points. And I'd like to get to the next segment now with that as a conversation starter. That should be fun. And I'd like to welcome the next segment. It's going to be a roundtable discussion about the general election 2014, which ended last week on Tuesday, of course. That was the 4th of November, 2014. And this segment's going to include myself, co-host Terry Weeks, and friend of the program, campaign consultant and pundit Victor DiMaio. Woo-hoo! For his fourth appearance on Spectrum 360. Friend of the program, welcome, Victor.
It's always a blast being here. I love being here. You guys are great. Both of y'all. You and Terry both.
Thank you.
Yes, and it's so expensive to get him to say that. You don't know what he charges me to say that on the air.
Lots of money. Is how prophetic that last little segment you did just for us talking here.
Yes.
How he was chopping Clay Aiken up to shreds.
Mm-hmm.
And before the election, here he is after election, and guess what happened? Clay Aiken lost.
Surprise.
It's almost like he was clairvoyant or something.
Well, yeah, he saw the problems with Clay Aiken, the way he was running. And that was
with a lot of candidates that were running this past election.
It was a microcosm of what a lot of Democratic candidates were doing that lost.
That's true.
Allison Grimes. I forget her first name, but she was the daughter of
You meant the nun?
Michelle Nunn?
Yeah, Michelle Nunn. That's
Michelle
right.
Michelle Nunn, yes. Yeah, in Georgia.
That's right. Michelle Nunn. And, Allison Lundgren Grimes and a few others. And I think the criticisms are real. I think they're valid. What I see myself from my perspective is that he was exactly right. Democrats aren't proud to be Democrats. They're running often as Republican light. They're distancing themselves from President Obama because he has had about a 40% approval rating right now. And so they're dissing themselves from him so that they could help their own election chances. And what they did in the process is they did not emphasize the positive things about the last 6 years during the first and second Obama administrations and how the country has improved and how Democrats need to take credit for that. Let's go back to 2000, okay? President Clinton ends his second term. There's a big budget surplus. Did you hear me say that? Budget surplus.
Democrat president.
That's right, for two terms. And the economy was very good during Bill Clinton's two terms. The next president was George W. Bush, of course. And he was in office for two terms, first and second administrations. And at the end of those 8 years, what happened? We had the Great Recession.
Right.
So the Republican Congress and the Republican president took a budget surplus from the Clinton administration and through the two Bush administrations ran the country right down. I mean, it went right down into a great recession, not a depression. And why didn't we go into a depression? It was because of President Obama's policies and resisting the obstructionist Republicans, which would have made the situation far worse. So that's what we want from Clinton to Bush. So the deficits went way up, the budget went way down, and as the budgets went up, we had all this spying start to take place, which was illegal and unconstitutional, which we have a big problem in rolling back now. That's my perspective. And yet President Obama gets the blame for what George W. Bush and his two administrations has done.
Actually, I read a poll somewhere that 25 or so percent of Louisianans blame President Obama for the Hurricane Katrina response.
Yes. Now, and when Terry first told me that several days ago, my immediate response is, we have big problems with our democracy because we can't run a democracy with people that are that uninformed. Obviously, Hurricane Katrina happened in 2006 during the second George W. Bush administration when Barack Obama was a U.S. senator and he wasn't president yet for another 2 years.
Right.
And 25% of Louisiana voters don't know that. I mean, that's an intellectual disaster. And people that are uninformed can't make appropriate decisions for a democracy. That's my point. So I was alarmed and I was appalled
and I was
by
depressed
that.
By that.
But yeah, absolutely. And I think we can relate it to right what's happened in general election 2014 in our state, where Rick Scott was apparently reelected. That has got to be one of the most abjectly foolish things that's happened in the history of the state of Florida. I mean, that is just unbelievably stupid. So I think we have major problems.
Tell us how you really feel, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, really.
I mean, it's true. I mean, this is a big, big problem for our state. And the people that supported Rick Scott, what are you thinking? It was bad enough that we had one administration from this man who is a large-scale corporate criminal and an unindicted felon. I mean, what part of taking,
$2 billion of Medicaid, Medicare money.
Yeah, and making a huge fortune out of it, and taking the Fifth Amendment of what about 70
times
in a row?
What part of carrying on state business on your own personal email and failing to disclose those and in violation of sunshine law?
Yeah, it's an absolute disaster. So, Victor, let me get your perspective on this. Obviously, the election results were in general negative for the left wing and liberals and progressives and Democrats in this last election cycle. What's your perspective on it?
Well, boy, you bit off a lot. You went back to you went all the way. You started off like 5 minutes ago with the transition from Bush to Obama.
Well, you really
and
you
have went
to
right
it,
to right in, you know, all the way to Rick Scott. So
I think you have to put it in historical context to know how to make a judgment on the Obama administration and what he started with. And what Bill Maher pointed out was there's a lot of positive things that have happened over the last 6 years. No, the economy is not recovered as quickly and as well as, you know, most people want to. But whose fault is that? Isn't that the fault of the obstructionist Republicans and the Republican Party, who are largely responsible for the Great Recession?
Well, you have to look at things when you're as old as I am, and you look at things historically, and you study history and you study politics, going back to FDR or whatever, you see that things go in cycles. You're right. When you started off kind of when President Clinton was in office, and we had a great surplus, the first of which we haven't seen since John F. Kennedy was in the White House in the 60s. Because what I kind of liked about what Clinton did is he took a lot of Republican ideas. And he was a master. I have a friend of mine, Al Fox, who was a lobbyist in Washington for 42 years. And he said every day, Bill Clinton used to outfox Newt Gingrich and used to drive Newt Gingrich crazy because he dominated the media. He was a very smart former governor. You know, governors are good administrators because they're used to dealing with the House and the Senate. They make pretty good presidents on a general basis, but not always. But
with a few notable exceptions.
Yeah. But in that sense, he was able to take things like welfare reform and make it. And that was drove the Republicans nuts. I mean, welfare reform is something Republicans have been railing on for decades, and he took it and made it his own. I'm not saying they made a lot of Democrats mad, but it made when he did leave office kind of unpopular. I think it did cost Al Gore the election by a couple hundred votes here in Florida, amongst other things.
The era of big government is over.
Because of,
that State of the Union speech?
The Monica Lewinsky thing. But it's so funny now because people rate past presidents like Clinton, and he's as high as Ronald Reagan past presidents chart as popularity. So it's ironic. And part of it was what you said when you started out, which is the surplus. Which Bush ended up, you know, blowing in for a lot of reasons. Number one, he cut taxes like Republicans are norm to do, and on top of that, he got us into this war in Iraq,
which was incredibly expensive.
That cost us trillions of dollars. I mean, we're not even counting the poor guys that come back here without an arm and a leg that we're going to take care of the rest of their lives.
Yeah, it's a war of choice.
A war of, you know, exactly. We had Saddam Hussein with a, you know, boxed up there with a no-fly zone in the north and south, but, you know, that didn't stop, you know, Bush from trying to. I got to hand it to his father. You look at his father and Colin Powell, they said, you know what, we're going to stop here and not go all the way into Iraq. We've done enough damage as it was. But, I was hearing somebody yesterday, a Republican friend of mine says, you know, the weapons of mass destruction, even though we scoured the country, didn't find any. He said, well, they were really there. Now ISIS has them. So,
well, there you go. This is the kind of thing that drives me crazy. Yeah, this is Hurricane Katrina kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. I mean,
So if ISIS has them, why aren't they using them?
I know. That's a good point.
And let me make one really good point about that. I think this is the whole crux of the matter. I think you two are both familiar with who General Wesley Clark was, former Democratic presidential candidate. Right. And U.S. Army general.
Right. He was a supreme commander over NATO at one time.
Yes. He was way up there. Very nice man, right. too. He campaigned in Pasco County in 2008, if I remember right. And I met him personally. Mm-hmm. And very nice man in person. But the point I wanted to make was during the Iraq War, right before Iraq was invaded by the United States. Okay, what was the reason for the Iraq War? Weapons of mass destruction, right? Possible nuclear weapons, chemical weapons, and other weapons as well. Right. Okay, so those are the big threats. Okay, so that's why we're invading the country, to protect our country from those threats, correct? I mean, that's what people understood, you know, weapons of mass destruction.
Right, and what we learn now was that Saddam was really, he was really buffaloing. You know, he was kind of playing bluff. You know, he kind of said he had him, but he really didn't have him. He really didn't have him. And he did that to protect himself, actually, and prevent other people from coming in, because that's how they play the game over in the Middle East.
Well, the point I want to make about Wesley Clark, there's actually a couple points, and I'll try to shut up and not talk as much. Number one, we knew there weren't weapons of mass destruction because of a man who was a former U.S. Marine, a Republican, and a U.N. weapons inspector. They destroyed 90, what he describes as 96% of the weapons of mass destruction, if you call chemical weapons weapons of mass destruction. The only weapons that I call weapons of mass destruction are nuclear weapons. I don't call chemical weapons weapons of mass destruction. Some people class them that way, and if they want to, that's fine. But Scott Ritter was the name of that man. He's a Republican, and he said flat out before the Iraq War, they're not there. We don't need to do this. And you can get that speech to this day from Alternative Radio at alternativeradio.org. Go look up Scott Ritter. You can get the speech now from back then. So we knew they weren't there. And then this is the bizarre thing to me. It's right before we attack Iraq, right? General Wesley Clark is on television. He's being interviewed, and he's saying, well, you know, he's being asked questions like, realistically, what are the troops going to face? And then here's what he says. Well, he says, well, we know that Iraq has not been able to achieve a nuclear weapon, so there won't be any nuclear weapons used. We know that most of the chemical weapons were destroyed, and what little they might have there, they will be afraid to use because of the retaliatory response to the United States. And so he says, it's not going to be a problem for our troops. I guess I was the only person in the country that started screaming at his television and said, then why are we going to war? You just said there's no reason for us to go to war. The reasons that were stated were the ones you just said aren't valid. So why are we doing this?
Right.
And nobody in the country asked this. I couldn't believe my ears. I saw Wesley Clark say that, and there wasn't a single commentator or anybody that seemed to catch it except me. I guess I was the only person in the country who noticed that. You just made the case that we don't have to go to war. Went to war anyway.
I'm done. And as we move the clock forward, you know, getting closer to our election on Tuesday, which we'll talk about in a second, that shows you little by little how unpopular Bush became, because little by little people kind of, you know, smelled out all these little things that, you know, were told to us. And
26%
and the Republican almost as bad as old as I am, and which I was, you know, Richard Nixon. I was in high school when Nixon was president. So you know, when you look at how unpopular Nixon was because of Watergate and all the things that happened then and all the lies that were told to us then, and we fast forward to Bush and all the lies were told to us then, and almost kind of, you know, led to the fact that, and I never thought in my lifetime, growing up, you know, born and raised in Florida, that I'd ever see in my lifetime a black man become president of the United States. And that shows you how hugely, it's a combination of things, but it shows you how hugely unpopular Bush was. And people are fed up with Republicans. They didn't want nothing. You know, the Democrats took over a 60. We had a veto-proof majority in the Senate, 60 votes. I mean, it's, you couldn't even get, you know, it was a filibuster-proof majority, which we haven't seen in probably 75 years, it's because of all the Bush mess. And because really, after 9/11, I said, you know, because, you know, after we were attacked, I thought, this is it. You know, the Republicans will be running us for the next 40 years. But then all the lies came and the war and so forth. So then we elected the first black man in the history of the United States, which, again, I never thought that would happen. And he would win Hillsborough County. He would win the state of Florida and win the United States. But his team in Chicago, and we mentioned this a little bit last time when I was on the program, was very smart. And what they did was they figured out what they needed to run the presidency, and they knew that Tampa, the Bay Area, Central Florida, if you could win the state of Florida, you'd be president. And where is the biggest bunch of swing votes out there? And it's in this part. Is we're actually what's called ground zero. We're
yeah,
ground
the I-4 zero. Corridor.
We're at ground zero for the entire United States of America. And in 08 and 12, they knew that they had to throw the kitchen sink out here to you know, to elect a black man to be president and win the state of Florida. And they started off methodically. They started off by registering voters. They came here a year ahead of time. They registered voters. They kept them tracked. Democrats are I hate to say this because I am one, a lazy voters compared to Republicans in a lot of respect. And you saw that in 08 that, you know, they did everything possibly right to win. The number one, they outspent in 08, they outspent McCain 2-1. I mean, we not only did they outspend them on the ground, because in Hillsborough County, for example, we had 7 field offices. Can you imagine having 7 Democratic headquarters in the county? We don't even have one now.
Yeah.
We don't even have a door with a shingle on it.
We have a door here in Pinellas County.
In Pinellas, you got a nice little house, you know, which they...
And
you have a great chairman, Mark Cannis. He's a very dear friend of mine. He just did an outstanding job. He finally... You took the 5th seat in the county commission, which is the first time in 50 years you've got the Democrats have a majority in the county commission. In Hillsborough, we still only have 2 Democrats out of 7 commissioners, so we're way behind you guys in that respect. But Obama came in, he spent the money on the ground, he spent the money in the air, and he won in 8. So what happens in 10? No Obama, no ground team, no air war. You know, we're left to our own devices. And you know, I've said this online. I've said this on the radio. The state Democratic Party is in very sad shape. They need a, as far as I'm concerned, Scott Arsenault, Allison Tant, they need to take a big old broom, sweep the place clean, and start over, because this is 2 cycles now. They've really, you know.
It's a disaster. This last election, the results were a disaster for the Democrats.
You're right, Terry. And if this was a business, they'd be fired. I mean, you know.
Absolutely.
I don't care if you sell cars or you sell insurance. If you don't make your quota or you don't win, you know, you got to find yourself another job. And
even if we had managed to get Charlie Crist elected governor, we would still have a veto-proof majority of Republicans in the legislature.
Absolutely.
So
yeah, we lost 6 seats. So Mark Pafford, who's a House, you know, they kicked off her son, our homeboy, because whatever, they didn't like the fact that he had a pack on the side. Can you imagine a pack that he could do stuff with? And it was almost a silly, stupid reason to fire him.
Yeah, I don't completely understand that.
Yeah, because everybody's got a pack. Everybody's got a pack. I mean, the state party's got a pack. House has a pack. The Senate's got a pack. Everybody's got a pack. But because he set up his own little pack, suddenly that was terrible. How terrible? How bad? It was kind of a BS excuse. Pardon my French, but to get
no,
rid
I think
of
you're
him.
Right.
And you know, and listen, Mark Pafford is a great guy. He's very progressive. He's a very, very intelligent guy, but he's not a, you know, you need both. You need to have a message, but you need to raise money. And that's, you know, and I saw it in 10 and it was kind of a wake up call to the Obama people for 12, because it said, ooh, you know, if we don't put these resources back in here again, like we did in 8, we're going to lose.
So they did.
They actually did. And mm-hmm. Being that this is what I do for a living, and I see it on both sides and the ins and outs, this, you know, this is exactly what happened now in 14. We didn't have the Obama team. We didn't have 7 field offices in Tampa. I think we had 2. Pinellas had maybe 1 or 2. I don't know. I think there was 1 or 2. But in every one of those field offices, they also had paid staffers. They had, you know, 10 to 20 paid staffers. And we're talking about 100 people on the ground, knocking mm-hmm. on doors, making calls, sending the data to Chicago every night. You know, that's what they had, which was not in 8 and 12. That wasn't there in 10, and sadly wasn't there in 14. So, you know, you mentioned it at your opening to the segment. I mean, we have the most unpopular governor in the United States of America. How we lose to this guy is beyond comprehension to me.
Because, me too.
Because... this guy is just that, he's kind of dorky. He's very uncomfortable. He doesn't speak well. I mean, he's you know, he's
he's everything a politician shouldn't be.
Right. He's a business CEO. He's the kind of guy that would hires you and fires you in a second for not doing your job
and
right.
Doesn't give it a second thought.
And doesn't give it a second thought. He's not a people person at all.
And is majorly incompetent at that. If you look at how his company was fined, how is there any competence there? And how would that be a basis for being a governor?
Yeah. So, you know, it's almost hard to believe, but. Again, looking historically on the 6 years of an two-year term of president, even Clinton, as you know, towards the end, he lost to Congress, too, because of Monica
yes.
Lewinsky. So he had to deal with an all-Republican Congress, and Obama's going to have to deal with an all-Republican Congress now, House and the Senate. So it wasn't really, you know, a surprise that we lost those extra seats in the Senate to give them majority. What hurts here locally is the fact that we lost six House seats to give them a supermajority.
That's huge.
That's huge because now all the things we're talking about, like vouchers, voucher schools and things like that, they're going to run roughshod over.
Women's health issues. Again, they tried to run roughshod over it before. They're just going to come right back at that.
Yeah. So we're going to have to. There's going to be some moderate Republicans out there that we're going to have to light.
Are you listening, Jack LaValla?
Yeah, Jack LaValla from this, ironically from this neck of the woods here from Pinellas County. You know, guys like Jack, you know, who
he is a moderate.
He's a moderate, and he's the biggest, guy helping the unions out, working both sides. He's you know against oil drilling in the Gulf. I mean, he's for a lot of things that Democrats you know care about and. But we don't have a choice. I mean, this is it. I mean, Jack's it right now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we have no senator of our own to speak of, except for Athena Joyner for this entire West Central Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so.
And poor Dwight Dudley, it's on his shoulders. I said, you got to save the whole state now, Dwight. You're the only one left.
Yeah. I mean, even Carl Zimmerman, who, you know, kind of trended over to the middle and to the right on a couple issues just to save, you know, just to try to be a moderate. It didn't help him at all. I mean, Kathy Casher's daughter, Karen Dental, lost in Orlando area. The Clearwater seat, of course, you know, there was no money there to really raise.
But it was actually closer than I thought it might be.
It's close because of the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at the, you know, that even when Farrell ran a couple years ago, he had really good
Ben
numbers.
Farrell,
again.
Yes.
Ben Farrell,
mm-hmm.
You know, he came within 2 points. And even this Republican suite. You know, he came within 5 points. So that Clearwater seat's been redistricted to be a Democrat seat. It's just you got to have the money to go over the edge. You got to get to that. Anybody that runs, I think three or four shows ago we talked about this. I said, if you run as a Democrat or a Republican, you're going to get automatically 40% of the vote. You got your solid 40%.
Yeah.
Now, the secret is how do you get that last 10? How do you get that 10% is where those independents lie. The largest group out there right now are independents. And
well,
where the heck do those guys go?
And the
go?
Well, where do
liberal
they
Republicans,
go?
They do exist. Although they don't call themselves that, I don't think, anymore.
Well, but they swing both ways. I mean, that's what keeps me up at night. It keeps every consultant in the world up at night trying to figure out where the heck are these guys at. And by the way, that's what Obama's team did in 8 and 12, is they ID'd those independents. You know, by talking to them, whether they talked to them on the phone or by knocking on the mm-hmm. door, and they said, "Okay, how where are you now? I mean, where do you?" And if they were swinging Obama, they were they had a big target on their back, and they really were massaged to make sure they went to the polls. So,
well let's talk about another thing. Talking about turnout and Democrats being lazy voters. That may be true, and I know down in Broward County and places like that, the Democratic turnout was very low, and I think if turnout had been better, that would have been enough to bring Charlie Crist over the top.
Yes,
but
I
if they're
so.
Lazy,
yes.
Why are they lazy? One of the things I've heard a lot of is you guys don't stand for anything,
well,
you Democrats.
I would characterize it differently than the word lazy. I would say inconsistent and perhaps discouraged.
Unmotivated and discouraged would be two words I would use.
Well, you know, Annette Tadeo obviously was a disappointment. She's from Miami-Dade. I mean, she mm-hmm. was chairman of the Miami-Dade DEC. And you know, so it was a fact. Terry made an excellent point just now, and that is if we had just had one or two extra percentage points of turnout, which we did a little bit better,
mm-hmm.
but the Republicans did better, too. So that's what hurt us, is that we had a teeny bit, not the extra 2 points. I know we're talking around, we're really talking around the margins here. But if you look at 60,000 votes statewide, that's peanuts. I mean, you know, we could have picked this up anywhere, really.
Yeah, that's true. But well, one quick point I want to make, the last point I want to make in this discussion is I watched all the election coverage. Once I got done doing my job covering the election, I went home and I watched the television coverage nationally. And I saw comments on MSNBC by Jonathan Alter, and he made the point that losing like this, the party that has the presidency in a two-term presidency, the second midterm election, this always happens. And so I was not surprised by it. And he made the point that there's only been two times in the history of the country when this has not been the case. One was during the Clinton administration, and one was back, I think it was 1822. I mean, it's not a real modern era instance of this. So there's only two times when this hasn't happened. So people need to realize this is perfectly predictable in the cycle and that this is going to happen. And I was not surprised by it, although I was surprised by the severity of it. But it, in general, this is what always happens and it cycles back. It happened in 2004 and then it swung right back to in 2006 and Nancy Pelosi was Speaker of the House. So there
exactly.
You go.
Exactly. And when the three of us sat down a week ago, I was cautiously optimistic, but, you know, I always held that I held that one card under the table.
Well, you never know for sure.
Because you never know, right? And look what happened. You know, it's almost like you hate to be pathetic about it, but that's exactly what happened. It's sad because you got to have the infrastructure. I knew, you know, and the Republicans knew too. They're not idiots either. You got to kind of tip your hat or credit them for what they did. I mean, they set up field offices all over the state of Florida. They had the money to do that, and they had people.
My question, though, is how do you? It's hard to get out the vote when people don't know what they're getting out for. I mean, I think we also maybe we didn't have as good a ground game, but we didn't have messaging. I really don't think the Democrats had good messaging other than vote for us. We're not as bad as them. We're not Obama. Don't worry. We're not like that. We're not liberal,
well,
really.
The Republican light philosophy does boil down to that. I mean, that's essentially what it is.
But you still got to appeal to the middle. And how do you do that? How do you get that last 10% to win an election? You know, you got to get your base out there. The Republicans certainly got their base out.
Indeed.
And they had, you know, their messages, you know, it was jobs, 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 jobs. And you look at that and they, you know, one of the things in the strategy world that we saw at the very end when Rick Scott pulled out that checkbook at the very end between him and his wife, pulling $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
And now you got the last few percentage of people that, you know, it's kind of hard to believe because the three of us had made up our minds, you know, a year ago.
When he was elected the first time?
Right. So
before he was elected the first time.
But believe it or not, there's 60,000 people out there that were just trying to figure out, okay, which way do I go? And that last $20 million that he poured in that campaign, and we had no counter to that because we had, you know, we raised a good amount of money, but we still got
nobody has that much money.
Right. So we didn't have that much money because as you, all around the country, we're trying to defend senators, you know, who end up getting beat. You know, we had races everywhere that, you know, we had to defend. And Republicans had, because they control the House and the Senate, because they control the entire cabinet, the Attorney General and Agriculture Commissioner and on and on and on. You know, the lobbyists who write the big checks, you know, they hold their nose and say, okay, where do you want me to write the check? And they've got all that kind of money. So, you know, that's that last, you know, bit of money, $20 million bit, got dumped in that campaign. Those last people are just, you know, their messaging is all about Scott, all about jobs, you know, and Charlie didn't have that much to counter with.
Well, so I think he could have countered with looking at what kind of jobs Rick Scott brought to Florida. He tried a little bit of that, but I would have liked to heard more of it. Most of the jobs that Rick Scott has brought to Florida are low-paying, low-benefit, what some of us call MIC jobs. Mm-hmm. They're not good jobs. They're not really the kind of jobs we want to see in our state.
And, Victor, it's come down to our last couple of minutes here. Give us a summary about going forward, what people should do and how people should put this in perspective in the last couple of minutes here.
Well, frankly, I think Allison Tan has to go. I'm going to lay it on the line. Allison Tan has to go. Scott Arsenault has got to go. Christian Over's got to go. We need to clean house. This has been two cycles now they've lost. We can't do any worse. We've got to go back to our roots and figure out, okay, and really figure out. And because we have a presidential election, we're now we're on the cycle. I mean, if Hillary Clinton's going to be it, then we need to spend two solid years registering voters, not having a big inner fight, because the Republicans are certainly going to have one between Jeb Bush and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. And
that
all
should be fun to watch.
That's going to be if we can coalesce around Hillary, whether that's
whoever it might be.
Right, we need to coalesce early and get say this is our person, and not have a big bitter fight. And start doing the things that Obama did at 1 and 8 in 8 and 12, which is get out there early, put those ground teams out there early, start registering voters, get a solid message out there, and don't hide from Obamacare. I mean, I'm a personal person who's benefited by
me
Obamacare.
Me too, absolutely.
I mean, my insurance has gotten cut in half, and I've had little injuries here lately. I've had to take care of that, so. You know, we got to get the message. Terry's right. Get the message out and be solid about it.
Okay, very good. Well, this has been Spectrum 360. Listen next week for more Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360 is produced by Sunburst Media Productions and originates from St. Petersburg, Florida. Executive producer, host, audio engineer, and senior reporter, Mark Skogman. Associate producer, Terry Weeks. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. for 1 hour and online anytime via podcast. To access the podcast, go to www.facebook.com/Spectrum360 Radio Program and click on the program link. Or go to www.tantalk1340.com, click on podcasts, and click on Spectrum 360. Thank you to all our listeners and supporters and the staff of Spectrum 360. Listen next week for another interesting, informative, and entertaining Spectrum 360 radio program.
That's all, folks.